Unamaga, and welcome everybody to Cast to the Past, the time traveling podcast where we take a look at old video games in a new light to see if they're still worth playing or if they're just big piles of garbage. My name is Josh.
And I'm Tom. Man, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a couple months.
Feels like it's been since the 90s.
Yeah, it's I had to walk all of the items from my old house to my new house.
Carry them one at a time.
Yep. It Josh, was only 2 hour driving distance. So, I mean, figure walking distance.
What had a longer gap between installments, us or the subject of today's episode?
Probably us.
Well, what are we talking about today,
Josh? Today we are talking about Crash Bandicoot 2 Cortex Strikes Back. Not to be confused with The Empire Strikes Back.
No, yeah. Oh, that's where they got the title from. I had no idea. Thought Star Wars owned the patent on striking back, but apparently not. A PlayStation game, Josh.
Yeah, we don't talk about those too much.
We should. We're trying.
No, Crash Bandicoot has a special place in my heart. Not too much of a familiar place in your heart. Because you didn't really grow up with Crash, right?
I was a one console household because that's what my parents bought. And I had Nintendo 64. You had a PlayStation. I think you had more than one console, right? Moneybags, Jaeger.
Oh,
over here.
Yes.
Grew up in a mansion with multiple consoles.
That was me.
You know, when you were kids, when you were a kid in the 90s, it didn't matter what kind of house your friend lived in. They could live in a box under the river, but if they had more than one console, they were rich. It was like, oh.
Well, just remember, I was the kid who started off with a Sega Saturn, okay? Like, I had the NES, I had the Super Nintendo and stuff like that, but like, when it came to the PlayStation and it came to the N64, I had a Sega Saturn. Okay? So I didn't really get to dip my toes into the PlayStation and the Nintendo generation there until after I got the Witness Knights.
Gotcha. Well, I think I can safely say we're probably never going to cover a Sega Saturn game on the show, but we've got one of the most iconic PlayStation 1 games up today.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh, I think it's only fitting if we get the nitty gritty out of the way. Crash Bandicoot 2 Cortex Strikes Back was released in North America on October 31st, 1997. For the PlayStation. I should stop calling it PlayStation 1 because back then they were like, what do you mean? There's only one. There's no more.
You can say the PSX.
Did it commonly get called that? Like,
yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that. Very cool. It was developed by Naughty Dog, a developer that we have covered on this show before, published by Sony Computer Entertainment, but also published, it's weird here, Wikipedia doesn't mention in the list here Universal Interactive, which is a big part of the early Crash years, directed by Jason Rubin and produced by a gentleman named Mark Cerny.
Oh, Mark Cerny, the producer and director of Our Lord and Savior, Knack.
So, Josh, I want to hear it right from you. What is your history with the character who is in all your social media avatars?
Crash Bandicoot was every console has their mascot. Every console has their platformer, right? You got Mario, you got Sonic, you got Gex, you got Glover, you got Bubsy.
What console was Gex the mascot for?
Hey, remember he was on all the advertisements for the N64 when he was dressed up as Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes, he's the iconic N64 mascot. Yes.
Yeah, 100%. But PlayStation had Crash. That was the platformer. You know, when you looked at the PlayStation at the time when it originally came out, it was a whole bunch of sports games, racing games, space games, all that kind of stuff. But then there was Crash Bandicoot. And that was the one that was like, oh, this is the family-friendly Mario-esque type game that was in 3D. So it was pretty cool. It was different. It was unique. But it was really hard. And was that a reason that I really liked Crash Bandicoot 1 when it came out? Yeah, sure. But over the time, you know, of playing that and stuff like that, I loved Crash Bandicoot. I loved it so much. And then within a year, they were like, all right, well, I guess you guys like this so much, we're going to release Crash Bandicoot 2. And I was like, well, how can you make a game better? How can you make this game better?
You And another friend of ours, Gilks2K, I know, are passionate Crash fans. So my experience with this is a little bit more fleeting. I remember there was a pizza parlor down the street from where I grew up that had one of the demo discs. And this was on one of them, along with Star Wars Masters of Teras Kasi and Parappa the Rappa. So that was the most Crash direct experience I got. But I was always kind of aware of Crash. There was the infamous commercials and all that. But Crash kind of slowly became a little bit of like a, I'm just going to say in the 2000s, kind of like a joke, forgotten, you know, it's like, oh, Crash, they're still making those games, you know, oh boy. Because after, you know, some history, he started to kind of get passed around between, you know, multiple sets of owners, and they didn't treat him with the same amount of care that he had initially when he was a big deal for the PlayStation. And so I never, I'll be honest, I kind of just regulated Crash to just like, eh, this is just one, this is a dead franchise or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it has come back around in recent years. There's a great deal of love for him, and he seems to have endured to a degree. So I'll just state up front, because I think it's important for this episode, my kind of analytical conversation I'm going to have today comes from me playing the Insane Trilogy, which came out in 2016, originally on the PS4, but now it's branched out. It's a polished HD. Is it a remake or a remaster, Josh? Can you clarify?
I would say this is a remake because it's from the ground up.
So it's new code or it's a refined code?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've also played the Insane Trilogy, of course, but I've 100%ed the game numerous times in the past as well. So
you've crashed a lot is what you're saying.
Yes. But no, going back to what you said, though, like Crash was a joke, right? The way that people talk about Sonic being a joke and talking about Sonic 06 and talking about Sonic Unleashed or what the werewolf one, or, you know, all those terrible Sonic games that came out. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of terrible Crash games that came out, too. And what does everybody talk about with Sonic? The Sonic Trilogy. What does everybody talk about with Crash Bandicoot? The Crash Bandicoot Trilogy, right? It's that history. It's that nostalgia that they have. And now we get the Insane Trilogy that came out, and now we get the Sonic Origin Collection that came out, which is remastering all of those games that we loved and we cared about. But with that, you know, we got Crash Bandicoot 4 from it because there was so much love for it there. And mm-hmm. with that, on Sonic's end, we got Sonic Mania.
Well, in reverse, but yes, you're on point there. Well, while we're on the subject of Sonic, I want to acknowledge something that we're going to be doing in this episode. So much like when we did Sonic the Hedgehog 2 about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago on the show, we used that basically to go over the history of Sonic as a franchise, because we were like, well, we're never going to cover Sonic 1. And you were very much like, Crash 2 is the way to go. So let's just mm-hmm. get into a little bit of the history of the development of Crash, and let's kind of, you know, let's explain why Crash 1 was such a big deal. Josh, can you remind everybody, who are the Proud Papas of Crash again?
It was Naughty Dog mm-hmm. and Universal Studios.
Yeah, so Universal kicked up a video game division in the early 90s, and they signed Naughty Dog to a 3-game deal. And Naughty Dog developers Andy Gavin and Jason Rubin, they were driving cross-country to California because that's where they were going to be living and working. So according to the creators themselves, in an interview that was done on a 90s TV show that seems to have been lost to the ages. It was called The Electric Playground, and it was hosted by none other than Tommy Tallarico. Did you know about this show, Josh?
I did.
Oh, you knew about Electric Playground?
Yes, I did.
Tell me what your memories are of it.
No, I don't know much about it. I always remember seeing it, though. And, like, I could never, as a kid, I didn't have TV Guide, so I could never, like, sync up to be able to see it, to watch it when it was on TV. But no, I am aware of it.
So in this age when like IGN or Polygon will cover anything, you know, you had to just rely on TV shows like this. And in the pilot episode, which I dug up on YouTube, Andy Gavin is being interviewed about the creation of Crash Bandicoot, because the show was covering the very first E3. And the idea for Crash was on this road trip where they were driving to California, and they decided that they wanted to take their favorite parts of Donkey Kong Country, Mario, and Sonic, and bring it into the 3D era. They took it to Universal Interactive, who at the time was kind of being steered by who, Josh?
Mark Cerny.
He was everywhere.
He was everywhere. We keep bringing him up.
Yeah, it's actually funny, the parallels to the Sonic 2 episode. He was in that episode, and now it's like, oh, he was also a Universal. It's crazy. Mark Cerny's the one who approved the entire idea. Crash kind of lives not just because of Andy and Jason, but because Mark was like,
okay, we're going to go ahead and we're going to make this Bandicoot a playable character in a video game.
He's pro-Australian animals, that Mark Cerny, I swear to God. Jason also said, and this ties into your opening for the episode, he said in a 2008 interview on a website called Crash Mania, which is now kind of defunct, but it seemed like a big Crash Bandicoot fan site. He said they really wanted to give Sony a mascot. He specifically was like, we saw Nintendo had Mario, we saw Sega had Sonic, and we were like, PlayStation is the only hardware that doesn't have a mascot tied to it. So let's go. We got to give it to them. One last note on Universal Interactive, Josh. This was the third game released under Universal Interactive. Only the third. Do you know what the first two were?
No.
All right. So I'll give you a hint. The second game was also by Naughty Dog.
Second game was by Naughty Dog.
The second game from Universal Interactive's catalog was the first game they partnered with Naughty Dog on.
The only other Naughty Dog game I remember from the past was Rings of Power.
Okay. Well, it is a game that I don't really have any experience with, but it's called Way of the Warrior. And it was on the 3DO. So that's Universal Interactive's second game. The first game, it kind of seems like obvious. It was called Jurassic Park Interactive. And it was also on the 3DO. And it was kind of like an interactive guided tour of the park. You remember in the movie, the little touch screens in the cars?
Yeah, yeah.
It was that.
That's cool.
Now, Josh, do you know how our little orange buddy was actually created?
Well, yeah, he was stuffed behind me. We got him at Too Many Games a couple years ago.
Fair, fair. What about the video game version?
The digital version? No, Tom.
No, okay.
Could you tell me about that one?
So according to Jason Rubin, he said that the entire Crash Bandicoot cast was basically a team effort, and he says no one should ever claim sole credit. Naughty Dog teamed up with this design group called American Exitus. And American Exitus had on their team a artist named Charles Zembelis. And Charles Zembelis was an art and character designer for a lot of like classics from the era. He was involved with The Secret of Nim, the Don Bluth film, the She-Ra cartoon, the dark Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon, Sadam, you know, the one where they're eco-terrorists.
Okay.
And he eventually continued to partner with Naughty Dog and Universal, doing design work for Spyro the Dragon and the early Jak and Daxter games.
Wasn't he originally called Willy?
He was. That's what Naughty Dog kind of settled on, is calling him Willy the Wombat. Do you know the names that Universal wanted instead?
Is it worse than Willy?
Get ready. Wes. W-E-Z.
Okay.
Wuzzles. Or Wizzy. They wanted one of those three names. Wes the Wombat, Wuzzles the Wombat.
At like Wizzy. What point in time do they think like this is like the kid, like the everyone's going to look and say, that's Wuzzle. Like, like
yo,
this is
yo,
it.
Bro, you playing Wuzzles today?
Yeah, you playing Wuzzles, bro. Bro, you got that new Wuzzle game? Like,
really bad idea. Really bad.
That's a really bad idea. But Crash, that makes sense.
So what Jason Rubin claimed in that interview is that when they were playtesting, a lot of complaints they got was that the original level designs were too empty. People were just kind of like running through them too quickly. And that was because the PlayStation could only render so many enemy characters on screen at a time. And Jason eventually came up with this idea to put crates with collectible items in them to fill up the blank spaces. And then, you know, the destructive nature of Willy crashing into the crates so much, they were just like, let's call him Crash. And that they did. So it's just that simple. When did you play Crash Bandicoot Uno for the first time?
It was one of the first games I got for my PlayStation.
Okay.
So it was like, I got Crash Bandicoot. I got VR Golf and VR Soccer, I think, just to be like, oh, and Gran Turismo. That was okay. Like the four games I got my PlayStation when I originally got it.
as we already said, like multiple times, it was the PlayStation 1's mascot. As of 2003, it has sold 6.8 million copies, and it is the 11th highest selling PlayStation 1 game. Do you want to play Guess the Top 10, Josh?
I can probably get half of them.
All right, we haven't done one of these in a while.
Ba, ba, I know. Ba.
So, number 10.
Oh, no, I'm just going to give you the names. I couldn't do them in order. I couldn't do them in order.
Go, let's
so
start.
So, on the list, you got Metal Gear Solid. You got
Metal Gear Solid is number 10.
Number 10?
That is the 10th highest grossing PlayStation 1 game with 7 million copies sold.
Okay, well, then you got Final Fantasy 7 and 8.
7 is the second highest, 10.1-ish million copies, and 8 at 8.6 million copies. So you have 2, 4, and 10 so far.
Oh, man. Gran Turismo 2?
Yes, that is the third highest selling at 9.3 million.
Okay. I'm trying to think of all the games that came out for the PlayStation 1.
You already said one of them when you told me what games you got.
Gran Turismo 1?
That is the highest selling PlayStation 1 game at 10.8 million. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 10 so far.
So there's 5. is it stuff that I would know?
You would. I'll give you a little spoiler. The other two Crash games are in the top 10.
Oh, okay. So 1 and 3?
2 and 3.
Oh, 2 and 3. Sorry.
Crash 2 is number 7 with 7.5 million copies sold. And Warped is number 8 at 7.1. So you have yet to guess 5, 6, or 9. One of the remaining games is a licensed game.
Harry Potter?
The very first one,
yeah,
yes.
I knew it. The first game. Yeah, Philosopher's Stone or Sorcerer's Stone. Great game. Tekken. Tekken has been in. Tekken 3.
Tekken 3 at number 5. And number 9, it's another really iconic PlayStation character.
Oh my god.
Tomb Raider, number 9.
Tomb Raider.
So,
I guess Lara was going to be the other mascot that they were going to have.
Kind of for the teens and adults, you know. So, yeah. So, it's just really funny that the first Crash Bandicoot is right outside the top 10. And the top 10 itself are just games you really associate. You know what? I'm actually surprised by, Josh, that there's no Resident Evil games in the top 10. Resident Evil 2 is the highest listed of all the franchise. And it's at number 14.
It's really like horror doesn't sell well, though.
Oh, okay. I didn't consider that.
Horror, you know, Resident Evil, Silent Hill, Clock Tower, all those horror games for the PlayStation. They didn't sell well because it was still a time where video games were meant for kids.
Well, Crash 2 sold really well, got into the top 10. And I think we need to talk about why it sold so well. Josh, let's talk about this game.
This game picks up very shortly after the first one, actually. Like, right after beating Neo Cortex, you are celebrating, pretty much, and Neo is coming back.
And as the opening cutscene shows, yeah, he dusts himself off, and he's like, that stupid Bandicoot. I can't defeat him. But maybe I can trick him.
And this game starts off by giving you options.
True. True.
It gives you can play the game however you want. You can start at whatever level you would like.
Yes, you get dumped into these circular little hubs that let you pick between about 5 levels at a time. And you do have to complete them all to move on. You have to get the main objective, which is collecting these gems that Cortex is tricking Crash into collecting for him. He's like, oh, if we don't work together and collect all these purple gems, and a force that I can't even handle will destroy the world. So there's that. And but, you know, who in the game doesn't really think that this is a good idea?
Oh, Coco,
his little sister. What did you think about the fact that Tawna, who was Crash's girlfriend in the first game, the one that you're basically trying to save? How did you feel growing up that like Tawna just kind of disappears?
Yeah, so. It didn't bother me because it wasn't like one of those things that really mattered much in the first game. And it's the same thing, I think, if I'm not mistaken, in Donkey Kong Country. When you go to certain bonus levels, there was the female.
Candy Kong?
Yeah, she was there, but she wasn't in the later games either, right?
I forget how often Candy was a part of the franchise. I don't have the best memory for her. I think Tana and her existence and just reading up about it is kind of funny because, again, we're going back to our Sonic episode, and they wanted to give Sonic a hot human girlfriend in his initial development. They were going to name her Madonna, and she was going to be this hot blonde. Tana, I'm reading up about, because in the Crash Insane trilogy, she's the statuesque, you know, very model, human model-esque bandicoot. And I'm reading, and Ruben and Gavin, like, said in interviews, they based her design off of Pamela Anderson.
That makes sense. I mean, that's mid-90s.
Yeah. And then in the second game, it's just like, it's almost like she was dropped out of shame. Like, we made a sexy bandicoot. Let's just get rid of her. Like,
yeah. It's not what the game was about.
You know, I know it's not what it's about. It's just one of those like funny things about the 90s where it's we have an animal hero. Their girlfriend needs to be so hot. You
know? I understand why they did it in the first time around. But like when it comes to it, she played no part to the story. She didn't really matter at all. She was extremely forgettable. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But when it comes to this game, that's. You know, we're talking about warping through space and warping into different dimension type stuff. That's all we care about right now.
Yeah, I agree with you because, like, you know, Cortex was like evil enough. It was like, hey, I'm experimenting on animals and you're an animal good guy. So it's like, well, it's basically Sonic. It's basically. Yeah. But like, I didn't need the hot girlfriend damsel in distress extra bit, you know. And
right.
So, yeah. Like I agree with you. She didn't really matter.
Pretty much is Sonic.
Oops.
Yeah. So Coco's here in the game. Coco plays a little bit of a part, a little bit of a role, just kind of progressing the story a little bit for Crash. She kind of helps throughout the game. Every now and then, you'll get a little cutscene of her kind of talking to him through like a intercom system.
Like Cortex is talking via like an intercom hologram, and then she'll pop in and be like, "Crash, I can't find," because like. They get separated and she's looking for him. I have a question for you. So in the Insane trilogy, all three games give you the ability to play as either Crash or Coco. Was Crash 2 built around swapping between the two? Not at all.
No, not until you didn't get to play as Coco, I believe, until the third game.
So a year later with Warped.
Yep. But the levels in this were very similar to the way that they were in the original Crash Bandicoot. You had your side-scrolling levels, you had your running towards the camera, you had your running away from the cameras, you had your more exploration levels as well. You had the fun hop onto an animal and ride type levels, but then there were some new things inside of it. We had different crystals that we were collecting. We had, you know, still the destroy all the boxes as well, but we also had the nitro boxes. The goddamn green boxes that if you even get close to it, it's a instant KO.
How do you feel about that?
I loved it.
You legit love the nitro box.
Yeah.
Mm.
It added an extra level of thought to how you were going to play this level. And it was an extra level of platforming, right? Cause like if you played through, you didn't even need to go and do really well with it. You could have gotten all the way to the end of the level, hit the box to blow them all up, and then you could have ran back and did whatever you needed to do.
I guess that's fair. It's just like this game's hard enough as it is, and I felt like, oh, now we're gonna put in a thing that one hit kills you on top of everything else that one hit kills you. I was just like,
yeah,
the TNT boxes I was fine with. But what did you think about the slide ability that they introduced in this one?
I liked it too. It was great to, you know, when you got it to hit particular enemies in a row and you got extra Wampa fruit from them. The sliding mechanic was really meant for when it came to the time trials. How do you get to the end of the level as quick as possible? Run, jump, slide as fast as you can to get to the end no matter what.
It's kind of funny because just like in Sonic the Hedgehog 2, he gets this iconic ability added that really, you know, freshens up his moveset, just like with the spin dash in Sonic 2. So what I'll say is I liked right off the bat how much more variety there were in these levels compared to Crash 1. It's like when I played Crash 1, the Insane Trilogy version, I got really bored really quick with how like when I got off the first island after the first time you beat whatever the chief's name is. Hang on. I remember. Oh, Papu Papu. when you beat him, I'm like, okay, we're going to get off of the whole tribal theme and probably onto something else. It's just like, nope, you're on the same kind of river again. Like, I was like, ah. But in the first hub on Crash 2, you know, first you have your tropical level, but then boom, snow level, you know, mm-hmm. right off the bat.
Variety was great. And it's one of those things that, you know, we talked about it with Sonic and we talked about it with a lot of other games that pumped out another game so fast, you know, between the initial launch of the first game to the second game. How do you add more and make it different mm-hmm. or make it better? And I feel like they've done that, you know, within, like you said, the first two worlds, you immediately notice how much of a difference this game is compared to the first one, graphically and, you know, level generated wise. Like, it just feels like it is a full, like they knew what they were doing this time. 13 months, they were like, we got it. It clicked. Like, that was it.
And even more remarkably, within that 13 months, they made a brand new engine. It's basically a sequel engine that runs 3 times faster and could animate more enemies and elements on screen. So they were able to give you more things to work with or work around. So, and again, 13 months, it's very impressive. Growing up, I would imagine you were like really excited that, like, wow, within 1 year, I get a whole new Crash.
Think about it, though. Mm-hmm. 1 year back then to us in 1997 felt like forever.
Okay, fair.
One year now is like, it's already
mm-hmm.
done.
Mm-hmm. True. You are correct. But I feel like even the gaming industry at large did, like, I mean, I don't have that much firsthand experience. I just think it's funny how, you know, these three games could come out in quick succession, get lots of critical acclaim, and sell really well. And I don't feel like a lot of people, you know, poo-pooed it that much, you know, but now we live in the year of the annual franchise and people are just like, oh, I'm so sick of it. Like, what do you think changed?
I think it's the type of games that are getting annual franchised.
Okay.
It is, you know, your sports games, which have always been, right?
Sure.
But, you know, Assassin's Creed, Call of Duty, it's the same game with a fresh coat of paint on it, right? This is the same exact thing that we were just talking about, but these are meaty. These are chunky. It's full-fledged. Like, it's completely different. Like, we talk about sports games and, like, you know, talk about all the different Call of Duties and stuff. Those are all firmware updates nowadays. That's all that they need to be. But, you know, back in the day, these were huge things. While it might not take as much to make a game that looks like Crash Bandicoot 2, but people want games to look as pretty, as pristine, and as beautiful as possible. I feel like we have higher expectations for things now.
Mm, we're a lot pickier.
Yes. And we are to blame because, well, we want it this way. Well, we want it this way, right? And what happens when we don't get it our way? This is trash. This is bullshit. This is crap. This is blah, 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 right?
I can see what you're saying. Yeah.
We're wrestling fans. If the storyline doesn't go the way we want it to, this is shit. Boo. This is garbage. We hate it. We don't like it, right? It's the same difference.
I was just starting to consider, though, I think the Crash games just had the benefit of gaming is not an oversaturated medium like it is right now. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Annual franchises coming out back then when, you know, pickings were a lot more slim. We were just happy to see something more familiar come out faster. But now there's so much crap. Like you said, we're, you know, our standards are different. There's so much crap. We start looking at repeats as reruns, you know, like, oh, this isn't good enough. Yeah. So I guess maybe that plays.
Because, like, let's continue on this a second, though, right? Like,
sure.
Like I said, you don't have everybody under the sun being able to make games. Right. You had two other companies making consoles at the time. You don't have everybody else like making, you don't have handhelds. You don't have, I mean, you had the Game Boy and stuff, but like,
are you writing off the Game Gear, Josh?
Yes. Sega wrote off the Game Gear. It was 1997, right? Crash Bandicoot 2 could have been used the whole Jew over for Final Fantasy 7.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, good point.
Right? That's exactly how they could have, like, Sony could have looked at this. This could have been a game to hold you over.
I get what you're saying. And I also, I double checked and I think it's actually funny. So Final Fantasy VII came out in 97. It came out in January, and you said this would be a nice chaser to Final Fantasy VII. Because you're right. That game was so freaking long that, yeah, you start in January, you finish in October. Oh, sweet. Here's Crash 2.
Yeah. But, yeah. And then you have Metal Gear Solid right around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Good year. Good year. Good series of years.
97 was one of the best years of gaming.
Mm-hmm. So when I started the Insane Trilogy, I did this little experiment where I was purposefully only playing it with the D-pad because mm-hmm. I was like, all right, this is how this would have came out. I should try to experience it as close as I can. Now, I mentioned, you know, we talked about the top. This is a tough game. These are tough games. I found that there could be some, I'm just going to say, screwy instances of death where I'm like, is that my fault or not? And after a while, I was like, well, let me switch to the analog stick. Let me see how this feels. And I can't say it's much better, but I don't know. What do you think? What did you think back in the day about how this controlled? And how do you feel about the way the Insane Edition controls?
Insane Trilogy controls a billion times better.
Interesting. What do you think the differences are?
Analog controls.
So you think they are the deal breaker? Like the
100%. So back in the day, we didn't have anything else to play. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't have, you had the analog sticks, but I don't believe you could use analog controls for this. I think you can only use analog controls for Crash Bandicoot 3. But you had to use the D-pad, right? And it was like, you were stuck with the D-pad and you were stuck using the controls the way it was. So you had to adapt. It was the same way that I loved the tank controls for Resident Evil. You were stuck. You couldn't play that game without it. So you had to learn how to do it. And it was like you just learned over time to accept it.
I agree with you that like in our childhood, in the 90s, when games were still just starting to emerge as a popular medium. Yeah. I probably got like, you know, a game on a couple occasions, birthday, Christmas, you know, did I do really good on a report card? Maybe that's a special treat. So like if I got a bad game or a game with a weird design mechanic, it's like, this game's bad. It's okay. I got to adapt to this, but I'm not dumping this entirely on Crash 2, but I just want to ask, just because it's something that we grew up with, does that make it good design?
No.
Okay. I wanted to see if
I understand. I understand that the tank controls are not good. I understand that using, you know, multi-directional platforming with a D-pad is not good, right? Imagine playing Mario 64 with a D-pad.
I can kind of imagine it with the DS version, but yeah, not great. Yeah,
right, exactly. That's the thing, like, you are limited to what you can do, but it is one of those things. It's a product of the time, and we were stuck with it the way that it was. Does it mean that it was good? No.
You know, I wrote this down in my notes and I put it in quotation marks, which means I must have heard somebody say it. And I don't remember if I saw this on like Dunkey or Zero Punctuation or Scott the Waz, but I have this quote that I wrote down that said, if you're going to demand consistent perfection from me, your game mechanics better be consistently perfect. And I think that was a bit of a source of frustration for, you know, 33-year-old me playing this as more than just a Pizza Hut demo and just being like, I'm good at platformers. I don't suck this much. And I just like don't understand. And I just found a lot of control problems in this game, either with how Crash can sometimes handle or with like his hitbox versus enemy hitboxes. What's your take on some collision detection?
Oh, the hitboxes suck.
Okay.
I will say that is the biggest, are you kidding me moments of these games.
Okay.
I probably curse the most at the hitboxes in these games than anything. I know I spun into this guy. There's no way that he hit me. I jumped on top of this guy. There's no way that I died from that. Like, yes, 100%.
Do you think in the fact that Gavin and Ruben said they were trying to take their favorite parts about Donkey Kong Country, do you think Crash should have had two hits consistently, not just with the mask?
No,
I can hear Gil. Oh, Aku Aku. I can hear Gilgs yelling at me. Yeah. Aside from when Aku Aku teams up with you and, you know, gives you that second hit. Do you think Crash just needed a second hit?
No,
not at all. Okay. No.
Mario didn't get a second hit until he got a mushroom.
That's true.
Sonic didn't get a second hit till he got a coin ring.
Well, but like, yeah. It's just, I just like,
Bubsy didn't get anything.
Bubsy doesn't even have a pilot's license.
What about Gex? He was a mascot.
He had quips. He could, if he got hurt, he would just say something funny and he would feel better. No, I just felt like sometimes with the enemies, it's like I would whirl, stop an inch in front of them, and they would just look at Crash the wrong way. And he'd be like, oh, I'm dead because you gave me an ugly look. I was just like, why? How did that
What's your happen? Favorite death animation?
Let me praise this. I love the kind of Looney Tunes level of just death gags of how comically he can die. I think I love when he gets crushed so hard that he gets squished into his shoes. And then you just see his feet like flopping around with his eyeballs because he's like,
he's like a pancake.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you?
My favorite is when he gets blown up and it's just, you see the shoes fall from the...
Or he gets set on fire and he gets burnt to a crisp and then the powder all falls down. The
or
ashes.
He gets eaten.
They find a way to make the deaths tolerable.
Yes.
I will say.
Yes.
Will
it's say. One of those things like, I'm mad that I got killed, but mm-hmm. I'm also laughing because I got killed.
The way Crash controls, because I said earlier, like, I like the way Crash moves. I like the way his attacks feel.
I like the way he looks.
He's a pretty boy. But the one thing is, he falls like a fucking grand piano dropped from a skyscraper, you know, like the second he's in the air, you have like almost no kind of downward control because
he's a heavy boy.
And it leads to a lot of chaos. And I feel like in Crash 2, this didn't happen as much, but the bridge level in a Crash 1, that's the one where like, even in the remake, people were like, you know, fuck this game. In Crash 2, I feel like they did a better job with like keeping all of the levels almost grounded in a way. You still had your very complicated obstacle courses. Mm-hmm. But what do you think in Crash 2 in regards to that, with like having to navigate like midair jumps and stuff like that?
In the Insane trilogy, I think they fixed it a little bit more because they added more. I know like when you're jumping, like they added like a little HUD on the ground to show you like where he's going to land or where you're going to be moving. And stuff like that.
I must not have turned that on.
In the original game, you didn't have that. You had a guess pretty much where he was going to be, where he was going to end up. And that was a little bit more difficult.
Okay.
The Insane Trilogy is, I hate to say it, but it is so much easier.
In a good or a bad way?
In a good way. Like it's more welcoming.
Well, that's always good. No, I get you.
But where would Crash be without Josh Mansell?
Are you talking the composer?
Yeah.
So I think the music of Crash is very fun. It's got this kind of like wacky, jazzy. Honestly, going back to the Looney Tunes comparison, it's got a lot of that energy. I did like what he did in the sequel. What are some of your favorite tracks?
The main theme to 2 is so good. It's the same theme, but it just has much more like an industrial sound to it. And mm-hmm. I think that's what I like most about the second game is the music to it. It's very atmospheric. It's just very fun. And like you said, it's a mixture of Looney Tunes and like, I don't know, like tropical, like Jamaican music kind of blended together.
I'd agree. I would agree on that, Josh.
Wow. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Like
when you hear that music, though, that music is Crash.
Oh yeah, Sonic kind of went, obviously with its association with Michael Jackson as the franchise went on, it was more poppy, like, you know, chiptune pop, and Mario is always whimsical. Crash has this wacky, jazzy kind of thing. Even when like the Mario games started bringing like big band elements, Crash is more like a ska band almost. Yeah. Would you disagree?
No, I agree.
Okay, cool. Cool.
Because even in 4.
We should host a podcast together. No, go ahead. What are you going to say?
No, but even in Crash 4, though, it's about time. Like it plays into that. Like the music it picks right up. It's the same style of music. It's not the same composer, but it's the same style of music.
They couldn't get Josh Mansell back? No. Is he still... Is he dead?
No, dead? No, he's actually in he's a band still alive. Right now. Yeah, yeah, he's in a band right now.
This game came out to, surprise, surprise, critical acclaim.
Whoa!
The game's graphics were some of the highest point of praise. So I'm going to actually, I want to read you a snippet. We don't really, maybe this will be something we start doing, but I was able to find the issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly that this was reviewed in. This was my favorite video game magazine back in the day. What about you?
EGM? Did you like this? Yeah, EGM kicked ass. I loved EGM, and I was a huge fan of Tips and Tricks.
Yeah, when I worked in a grocery store in our hometown growing up, I would, on my lunch breaks, I would, when the magazine section actually had gaming magazines, I would go buy the newest copy of EGM and read it on my lunch break. Just the best. So their four critics, because they, you know, they did like the kind of combined scores, they gave it a 9.5, an 8, an 8, and an 8.5. And then their four big categories, they gave the visuals a 9, sound an 8, ingenuity a 7, and replay value an 8. So really high marks. They're saying this is great. The one of the reviewers, Dan, this is the first line of his review. I'm always hearing
Tell
around the office.
Tell me what Dan had to say.
Dan, what do you got to say, Dan? And Dan said, I'm always hearing around the office, I didn't like the first one, but Crash 2 is awesome. Do you think this is like head and shoulders better than Crash 1, like indisputably, Josh?
Yes. Crash Bandicoot 2 is the best of the trilogy. It is the Empire Strikes Back of the trilogy. No, it is the best of the trilogy. Crash Bandicoot 1, you got to respect it because of doing something different, right? It was sure. A brand new type of game. It did something different. Crash Bandicoot 2 perfected everything that the first game did and made it better. Crash Bandicoot 3 gave us too much stuff, and that was the problem. And it did, and it's the same thing that a lot of games do. And a lot of games do this. The third game tries to go way too big, tries to do way too many things, and just doesn't stick the landing. I know a lot of people who love Crash Bandicoot 3. Producer Becca loves Crash Bandicoot 3. One of her favorite levels is the one, I think, when you're riding on the Great Wall of China. I'm like, It's fun, but it's not Crash Bandicoot 2. Like, it's not Crash Bandicoot 2.
So I'm going to be real for you. Mm-hmm. I didn't play Crash Warped in the Insane Trilogy. I played 1 and 2. I'm not saying I'm not going to play it. I just, you know, got to where I needed for the show.
Yeah.
So anything else that you can just kind of give me and the audience on Crash 3, like while you're kind of giving it a Josh review?
No, like I said, Crash 3, it's a good game. The levels are fun. The ideas are unique. But like I said, they just give you way too much. You get a bazooka in that now.
Oh.
You get motorcycles that you get to drive.
I heard the motorcycle levels in 3 are like the bridge levels in 1. I heard that they suck.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes. Yes.
They do? Okay.
Yeah. Like, they just tried so many new things, and some of it hits and some of it doesn't, and a lot more doesn't than does.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, for me, you out there might think differently, but
tell us in the comments.
Yeah, tell us, because I'm telling you right now, Crash Bandicoot 2 is the better of the games.
It sold really well, good reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Crash 3 happened, and then after that, Crash Universal didn't keep it, and Naughty Dog couldn't take him because they made him through Universal. He didn't belong to Naughty Dog, which is just really funny that, like, that's the game that put Naughty Dog on the map, and they can't do anything with him.
So there was two more Crash Bandicoot games that came out afterwards that were actually good after the original trilogy.
What were those?
You had Crash Team Racing. And then you had Wrath of Cortex. That was the one that came out on the Xbox, the PlayStation 2, and the GameCube.
Yes.
After that, everything was bad.
So Traveler's Tales, funnily enough, they developed Wrath of Cortex. TT Games developed Wrath of Cortex. And then after that, we got Crash Twin Sanity. And you said that's a bad one?
Yeah.
Very bad. Okay.
Yeah.
And after Twinsanity, Universal Interactive, which at that point had been rebranded to Vivendi, was merged into Activision. And from that point, Crash has been owned by Activision. And I think a lot of people would agree from 2008 onwards, they did not do that great of a job in handling the Crash franchise, you know, starting with the first, I believe the first Crash game under Activision was Crash Mind Over Mutant. Do you know anything about that, Josh?
Mind Over Mutant. Was that the one for the...
It was developed by Radical Entertainment.
Was that for the Game Boy Advance?
No, this is a mainline console installment.
I don't.
Yeah. No. Crash Mind Over Mutant, PS2, PlayStation Portable, Wii, 360, and DS. And this was developed by Radical Entertainment and published by Activision. And it's the last mainline Crash game before It's About Time.
What about Crash Bash?
Crash Bash?
Yeah, Crash Bash was the Mario Party version of Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, I knew they had a Mario Kart. I didn't know they had a Mario Party. Tell me about Crash Bash.
I don't know anything about it.
Oh, you never played it? Okay. No,
I just know that it exists.
You know, you were asking a couple questions about its handheld legacy. There were several Game Boy Advance Crash games, Crash Bandicoot Entranced, Crash Bandicoot Ripto's Rampage. They tried. They really tried a lot with this, but again, it kind of went
It's weird that they went right to the Game Boy Advance, though, right?
I mean, what are they going to do, put on the N-Gage?
No, but like, it's weird that they went portable with them.
It really comes down to almost like it's Naughty Dog's involvement, because with Wrath of Cortex, as you said, it was on GameCube and Xbox as well. Like, once Naughty Dog left, they were just like, put it everywhere. And I don't know. I don't know why they did that, really. Except maybe for money, but
why did you do that, Activision?
Tell us, respond to us specifically. So eventually we did finally get Crash for It's About Time in 2020 after the success
what
of
a
the
great
Insane
name.
Trilogy. Yeah, tell us, tell me about it. Tell me about it.
No, I'm saying what a great name.
Yes, because it's about time travel, but also it's them saying it's about time.
Right. It's
what do you
perfect.
What do you think about four? What do you think?
It's
about
really four? Hard. I still haven't beaten it yet. I'm about halfway through the game. It's really fun. It calls out a lot of the stuff from the original trilogy, and it has a lot of deep cuts from some of the other games in it as well, but it makes fun of those games. So it's more of like it's like a ha 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 gotchas. But no, it's a very good game.
How confident do you feel about the future of Crash after 4?
Well, I felt really good for a long time. Until they pulled Toys for Bob and they were like, you guys don't exist anymore. Go make Call of Duty. Our Lord and Savior, Phil Spencer, came in and saved the day and was like, no, don't do that. That's bad.
Bad. You're bad.
You're dumb. And bought Activision and said, stop that. And now we might be getting Toys for Bob back. And, you know, we might be getting Crash 5. But we might also be getting the rumored Toys for Bob Banjo-Kazooie.
By rumored, you mean the clickbait that our friends Kind of Funny did for their Kind of Funny Games Daily.
Hey, if it happens,
I'll be so pissed.
It's not clickbait.
I will be very upset, but that's a conversation for a different space.
Why would you be upset?
I would be upset because Xbox owns Rare. And if they own Rare and tell some other subsidiary to go remake Rare's game, it basically like, why did you buy Rare? Just bury them. You know, dig a hole and bury them if you're not going to give them
the Banjo. You got Sea of Thieves, Tom.
Which is fun. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like, we want to remake Banjo-Kazooie. Should we call the company we own who made him? Or should we give him to someone else? I don't want that to happen. I'm not shitting on Toys for Bob. I know you guys need to feed your families and you need work, but just stay the fuck away from Banjo-Kazooie. At the end of this, we have to answer one question, Josh. What is that?
Would you skip, play, beat, or complete?
I would say this is a game worth beating, but it is so difficult. I just have to say that if you only played it, I wouldn't blame you.
I say beat the game. If you really want to get the full story, complete it, get all of the gems, all the extra stuff, find out what other hidden things are happening in the world of Crash Bandicoot. Maybe Cortex isn't the only one planning some evil, diabolical schemes.
Yeah, maybe you'll find out what that evil Aku Aku was in all the Game Over screens. that I looked up doesn't actually appear until Crash Warped. So it's kind of like, I think that's one of the dumbest things the Insane Trilogy did. Just going to say that, like, every time I got a game over, it's like, who's this character? Who are you? You weren't in Crash 1. You're not, like, why are you? Yep. Why are you telling me game over? I don't know who you are. So just going to throw that out there.
Yep. But there you hear it here first. We both say beat it.
Beat it. But
Tom doesn't want toys for Bob to make banjo.
And they say they want it. And I say, Bob, beat it, beat it, beat it. Don't touch Banjo Kazooie. This is a musical podcast now.
Yes.
But yes, Crash is an adorable icon of the 90s. And he has some good games. But I will say, again, I'm not trying to harp on this, but they're tough. They're tough games. So come with patience or don't bother.
Also, if you guys want to play a game from Toys for Bob that's awesome from the past, play Pandemonium.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard of that.
You're a lady who's kind of like a wizard type thing. And she has a friend who is like a jester. And you're just going on it's a platformer type thing, but it's really fun. It came out on the PC, PlayStation, and Sega Saturn.
Look at you trying to squeeze Sega Saturn into the show again.
We got it. We did it. We're coming back, baby. But yes, that's all the time that we got here today.
Much like the Sega Saturn, we were done in an hour. So.
Yes, but until next time, this has been Josh.
And I'm Tom.
Whoa! And we'll see you in the future. While we boot up the Triflex Capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. This show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, or future of gaming, check out Bad Elephant Gaming on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And don't forget to watch our other videos on YouTube, where we bring you gaming experiences you'll never forget.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun. Come chat with us anytime at twitch.tv/badelephantgaming.
Thanks for listening.
And until next time, we'll see you in the future.